we go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Let's try this again, shall we? We had a successful mic check just a matter of a minute or so before beginning the program. Let's hope it stays that way. We are at the mercy of this piece of incredibly sophisticated machinery. I did a number of things trying to appease the gods earlier. And, you know, when properly appeased, our gods can be most effective. I joke, but nonetheless, it's been deeply frustrating to have these strange technical problems here in the last few days. And I don't know, maybe something solved itself. One never quite knows. We shall see. This is the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. We like to call what we do conversation radio. And with any luck at all, we will actually have conversation this evening. So, you know, cross your fingers. If you're not right there at your computer and can't listen simply by going to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com and clicking Listen Live, there are a number of other platforms by which you can access the program on your smartphone. Things like, Tuner Internet Radio, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher Internet Radio, Dar.fm, Streama.com, Roku devices. The podcasting address is at WhiteRoseSociety.org. Go to the subdomain for this program, Head On with Bob Kincaid. And you can always get the podcast over at iTunes. So that we try to make it as easy as humanly possible. Oh, hi. I'm Bob Kincaid. Did I get to that part yet? Good. That's out of the way, too. So far, so good. I'll be watching the chat room. Do you go to the chat room? How often? When was the last time you were in the chat room? HeadOnRadioNetwork.com/chatroom is the home of our little live, real-time, online, augmented conversation radio experience. It will be filling up presently, one hopes. This is the fourth day of February, 2013, and I tried really hard to get a show in on Friday evening, having come home from the Health Action 13 meeting sponsored by our friends at Families USA, who always do such a good job pulling that thing together. But technical gremlins, what have you, prevented that from happening. Like I said, I'll be watching the chat room during the pendency of the broadcast to make sure, because the chat room, I can always get a feel by email, or that doesn't come out right at all well, does it? Anyway, y'all let me know in the chat room and by email and occasionally by Skype chat when things begin to go sideways. So we will cross our fingers. Now, where to begin? We had a bunch of stuff we could have hit had time permitted. on Friday, but it didn't. It just didn't work out. We're broadcasting in mono, Randy, so there's no way for me to adjust balance between left and right channels. There are no left and right channels. It's all just mono. That was one of the little things I did to see if anything would be any different. So can't help you there. Let's see now. Thank you, Dr. John, coming through loud and clear, Dr. John says. Let me go to something Dr. John wrote in recently, because the program, what little bit of a program we got out on Friday included reference to that, well, she's much more than just an important part of the teabagging movement. She's one of its greatest thinkers. And I'm talking, of course, about Victoria Jackson and her call for White History Month. You know, it's February, and the idea of there being a Black History Month always drives some segments of the right wing quite around the bend. Lately, that has included Victoria Jackson, who feels like white folks aren't getting their due because there's a month in which we try to examine other, quite often suppressed, histories. And so I knew that story would probably light a fire under Dr. John. He wrote, "Sorry you had problem and had trouble and had to bail on the program, Bob. I always come when summoned, though. You and I both know the simple answer to why no White History Month is that whiteness is the unmarked category. Unmarked category. It's how we define all the others. Deviation from that normal state. Same story with male, with abled, with, say, age 25 to 39, with heterosexual. The socially valued categories are those that get to define every other one as unnatural. Therefore, they get an adjective." What's striking about that question, why no White History Month, is just how unexaminedly stupid it is. John asks, parenthetically, is unexaminedly a word? It is now, because it fits. Dr. John says, it's like, if we evolved from chimps, why are there still chimps? There's only one answer. More ands, which works quite nicely insofar as this is, in fact, More and Monday. Do they really want, Dr. John asks, a White History Month? In global historical terms, yes, we should probably study white history, defined as Northern European history, since about 1650. Only one month a year. There just ain't much of it if you take a long view. And by long view, I suspect Dr. John is talking about things that, go back a few millennia, few thousand years that don't necessarily. Because I know it'll come as a shock to the Victoria Jacksons of the world, but white folks didn't invent writing. White folks didn't discover fire. White folks didn't come up with the wheel. White folks didn't invent art. No. There's a lot of stuff that white folks didn't do that they just, you get the idea. Conversely, Dr. John says, we could do white history by addressing the fact that white is a shifting social category. We could tell the little ones about how Germans, Irish, Jews, and Italians were once considered not white, and how they came to be seen as white. And then we can sit back and laugh at the Victoria Jacksons of the world when some bright seventh grader says, wait, so that means white is really just who we decide should be in charge? Then let's make everybody white and be done with it. Or how about this for White History Month. We could teach how there was no real concept of white or black before the slave trade really took off, say the early 1700s. We could talk about how, for the first century or so, the American colonies drew very little legal distinction between slave and servant, and how the laws made no reference whatsoever to color in saying who could marry, be freed, enter contracts, buy land, etc. Where do white people come from? In a very real, historically demonstrable sense, white people are created in the moment some rich jerks decide that a concept like race can help capitalism grow. Oh, I think we need to carve that in stone somewhere now, don't we? White people are created in the moment some rich jerks decide that a concept like race can help capitalism grow. That's deep. Is this really what they want to teach, Dr. John asks? I sort of doubt it. So in the meantime, that dumbass question is just meant to soothe the old racists on their couches, a typical right-wing talking point that can't survive a nanosecond of thought. John adds, finally, on your next show, and that would be today, I'll put a $50 challenge on the table. I'll match the first 50 to come in any combination should folks feel like they can help out that way. And that is much appreciated, Dr. John. We are we shoveled ourselves a nice little hole in January, and it would be nice to start trying to crawl out of it here in February. So Dr. John's $50 challenge is on the table. He will make $50. He will make your, any of you, combination of $50 turn into $100 over the course of the program. Nice, huh? Yes, thank you indeed, Dr. John. Being as it is Moran Monday, some show notes, program scheduling, things like that. I expect us to be here in Washington, D.C. We are broadcasting live from Washington, D.C. I probably should have noted that. From the headquarters of the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Campaign up here on Capitol Hill, not far at all from that fine Thomas More hat-wearing Moran himself, Justice Antonin Fat Tony Scalia. You did know that, right? Everybody saw his goofy dumbass hat at the inauguration and wondered, what kind of goofy dumbass hat is that nasty old fascist wearing? Well, we know now. It is if you go back, and this being radio, it's no good at talking photographs, like talking about photographs like dancing about architecture here. But still, if you go back and you type into your little search box thingy, Antonin Scalia, stupid hat, inauguration 2013, you're likely to come up with a photograph of Antonin Scalia wearing a really stupid-looking hat. And it wasn't just any stupid-looking hat. I mean, after all, we all remember when Richard B., big-time Dick Cheney before he dicks you, went to, what was it, a commemoration at, I want to say Auschwitz in Poland, or maybe it was a state funeral or something, and he sat there shivering in the cold with his Nanook of the North fur-trimmed hood pulled up around his face. Yeah, nothing says dignity of the American Republic quite like a cranky old white warmonger freezing. So I suppose there's a history. No, when we all saw Antonin Scalia wearing, and this is Moran Monday, so we might as well work through this. When we all saw Antonin Scalia wearing his dumbass hat, we all wondered, what kind of dumbass hat is that? Because we all know that Antonin Scalia is, in fact, an ass hat. It's a Thomas More hat. Anybody? Since we've run off down the historic garden path, Thomas More. Anyone? Bueller? 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 Thomas More is revered deeply by right-wing religio-fascists. Okay? Because of his presumed principled stance about his ethics or his morals or his rights in the face of Henry VIII deciding that he didn't want to be married to one or another of his wives anymore. I can't remember which wife it was, frankly. But Thomas More was a Roman Catholic zealot who enjoyed, I mean to no end, torturing, tormenting, and otherwise persecuting human beings in the name of the king. Lo, the king! Enjoyed persecuting people in the name of the king and presumably in the name of God at the same time. Oh, he enjoyed it. He enjoyed it immensely. He was Henry VIII's right-hand man. But when Henry VIII grew tired of whichever wife it was he grew tired of, perhaps it was Anne Boleyn, and said, I want a divorce. Or maybe it was that. Maybe it was wife number one. I want a divorce. That led to the reformation of the church in England. And it also led Thomas More to throw a religiously inspired hissy fit. Because he could not countenance a divorce. Right? Are we there? Yeah. Let's find out which wife was it. Yeah, since 1935, the Roman Catholic Church has held Thomas More to be a saint, by the way. He is described in Wikipedia as an English lawyer, social philosopher, author, statesman, and noted Renaissance humanist. They don't note him as being a torturer, but he was into that too. He wrote The Utopia, published in 1516. But more than anything else, he pushed back against the King of England when the King of England sought to remove the power of the papacy over the throne of England. And he refused to accept Henry VIII as the supreme head of the Church of England. He was imprisoned in 1534 because he had refused to take the oath required by the First Succession Act because the act disparaged papal authority. And he also opposed the act also disparaged Henry's marriage to Catherine of Aragon. You ever seen a painting of Catherine of Aragon? Yeah. So he got himself, after spending time doing Henry's dirty work for him, he eventually got himself charged with treason. And having been charged with treason, Henry had his head separated from his shoulders, at which point in time it was found that he had been even more of a religious freak than people originally suspected because he had been wearing a hair shirt the whole time, tormenting himself, mortifying the flesh. Now, it's interesting that because of another story, since we're off down the historical garden path, that one of his works authored was A History of Richard III, in which he did the early work of creating the public relations nightmare that has followed Richard III ever since. He created the monster, Richard III. Now, Thomas More also didn't like Martin Luther, and he didn't much care for William Tyndale, who created in More's mind a heresy by writing the Bible that people could actually read. Thomas More didn't like that either. And so eventually, the hypocrite gets his head lopped off. And now, several hundreds of years later, he is, in fact, quite the hero. And that's whose hat. For instance, if you go and look up, as we noted earlier, on your favorite search engine, look up Antonin Scalia's stupid hat, and then look up Sir Thomas More, you will, in fact, find that they are wearing the same stupid hat. They are their own little private stupid hat society. So what that photograph meant of Fat Tony Scalia sitting there in his Thomas More Stupid Hat Society membership hat that he's gotten, along with a secret decoder ring and a certificate suitable for framing, and quite frankly, or quite possibly, who knows, I don't know, the Sir Thomas More hair shirt and the Sir Thomas More piece of barbed wire to wear around your leg, or whatever Opus Dei weird bullshit madness that Antonin Scalia is involved in, that hat was a statement. It was a statement of conservatism. It was a statement of religious piety, to let the world know that even though he had to sit there, he was going to be as Thomas More was to Henry VIII in Henry VIII's trampling of the church. Really, I'm not kidding. Who knew so much could go into a hat? But it did. Because that was a subtle, not quite so noticed among the hoi polloi kind of message. Dog whistling, if you will. It was a dog whistle to the weirdos of the religious right, letting them know that Antonin Scalia was on the job and watching out after that one. You know, the Kenyan Muslim extremist with the deep-seated hatred of white people and anti-colonialist tendencies who's an Islamo-fascist and wants to take away your Bible and your mother and all things good and decent. Antonin Scalia was telegraphing a message to the weird, from the weird. It's kind of like the way you can send an email to yourself, you know, to Bob Kincaid from Bob Kincaid. And it shows up in your inbox and from your sent box. This was to the religiously insane, from the religiously insane. And it's all embodied in a really stupid-looking, ugly, not particularly warm hat. Now, Richard III. Most of us, if not all of us, know the opening lines to Shakespeare's Richard III. Now is the winter of our discontent, made glorious summer by the sun of York, and all the clouds that lowered over our housetops in the deep bosom of the ocean buried. Shakespeare really pours it on thick. He makes Richard III look like an absolute thug, and in the process makes him not only philosophically evil, that wasn't enough, he had to also make him physically disgusting. And so, forevermore, since that time, Richard III has been portrayed as anything from a hunchback, whatump, to, I mean, let's see, who played, there was a Richard III with, I forget who played him, Annette Bening played Anne Neville, the woman he wound up marrying, he being Richard III. But he's always being played with a humpback or bent over, you know, sort of crab walking across the stage, saying things like "Winter of our discontent," and saying that though I am rough and villainous, yet I shall have her. I shall not have her, and saying that since he could not be loved be loved in the world, he would therefore just do evil. I mean, Shakespeare worked over Richard III. Now, here's what's interesting. Shakespeare would not have known Richard III had Richard III walked past Shakespeare on the way to the pub. No. Richard III was the last Plantagenet king, and he had died a good 300 years before Shakespeare's time. At least two, if my history's not off. And because he was a loser, and I don't mean like loser, because he lost at the Battle of Bosworth Field, the winners, of course, get to write all the histories, and they must have had a particular animus against Richard III. Because they worked so hard to make a villain of him. And among those people who made a villain of Richard III was Thomas More. Now, Thomas More worked for Henry VIII, and Henry VIII was a direct descendant of the guy who became king by killing off Richard III. With me so far? Yeah, that's it. That's it. There we go. Yeah. The 1995 Richard III, Ian McKellen, you know, otherwise known as Gandalf, played Richard III. Richard III was 32 when he died, okay? And Ian McKellen is a brilliant actor. But 32 he's not. That whole film was based in, was reimagined as a sort of proto-fascist Britain of the 1930s, back when the Royal House of Windsor was having its Nazi fascination. Oh, that little Mr. Hitler is a lovely man, really. Yeah. Yeah, Dr. John and Marty both making the call on that. No, Michael, stop, Michael, no. The hat! Email, the hat! With exclamation points. Bob, are you saying Barack and Michelle are getting a divorce? Oh, noes! Tony, no approvo! No, stop, let's please. There are already enough rumors going around. I mean, what with that picture coming out of Barack Obama shooting a shotgun and all, that, I don't mean to be critical of my progressive liberal allies, but We don't make ourselves look particularly knowledgeable in the gun discussion when that thing that is obviously a shotgun that Barack Obama is firing is referred to as a high-powered rifle. Eek! Thanks for letting me know the audio issues have crapped up. Yeah, no kidding. Nothing has changed, folks. No levels to check. It just does this. So it will truncate the problem a little bit, or program a little bit. Problem two, for that matter. It will truncate the program a little bit. I'll be back. He said, I believe it's because we've had separate classes of military personnel at some level discussing why the sexual harassment problems exist. He says, I have to believe the more we treat people equally, the more likely they are to treat each other equally. Well, that's at least a respectably thought out position. As opposed to, say, the Wall Street Journal. That little honk you just heard in the background is Ferg. He's already seen this story. The Wall Street Journal. Of course, it's owned by Rupert Murdoch now, so it's about as factual and about as accurate as, say, Fox News Radio Rwanda. Check. 1, 2. Check. How they are America's voice for the business community, of conservative traditionalists. The Wall Street Journal felt it incumbent upon themselves to explain to us lumpen proletariats walking around on our knuckles out here, breathing through our mouths and eating with our hands and not knowing which fork to use with the shrimp, to explain to us just why it is that the women folk can't be out there in the front lines. I thought Ron and Raleigh offered a good argument against it last night. This is not that. No. Instead, the Wall Street Journal felt themselves compelled to go to a place that you and I would probably never dream of going. They tried the argument, the women folk don't have the same upper body strength as the men folk do, and they're not as fast, and, well, they may not be as smart, and they're just not your warrior. They're nurturing people. We don't need people nurturing out there on the front lines against, our global enemies. And that didn't fly. not when all it takes is a finger pull to make God knows how many rounds of NATO-approved 5.56 millimeter ammunition fly out the muzzle of an M4 rifle. Not, in fact, when you consider, and this is not an endorsement, it is not a criticism, the fact that other militaries have women in combat positions who are undoubtedly very, very deadly. So the Wall Street Journal, on this Thorn in the Side Thursday, said this. I'm going to try not to squeal or yell or holler or laugh uproariously. Societal norms are a reality, and their maintenance is important to most members of a society. It is humiliating enough to relieve yourself in front of your male comrades. Obviously, the Wall Street Journal has never been drunk out back of a bar next to the dumpster about 1 o'clock in the morning when, when some Weisenheimer's plugged up the John and the... then again, I imagine the Wall Street Journal folks don't go to the same kind of roadhouses we do. I mean, there's a reason the word pissing contest is a phrase inside the English language. But anyway, never mind the folks who... Let's get back to work. One can only imagine the humiliation of being forced to relieve yourself in front of the opposite sex. Not to say what anyone's norms are or anything, but it's apparent that nobody at the Wall Street Journal is married. Or has children. Or has ever changed a diaper. Or potty trained. It is humiliating. Now, we're talking about a combat circumstance. It is humiliating enough to relieve yourself in front of your male comrades. I'm not doing this for prurient reasons. This is what passes. Really, not kidding. This is what passes for deep policy thinking over at the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. I would disagree with it. I would disagree with the premises, the concepts, but I would expect to see this over at Wingnut Daily or Newsmuck or on the pages of the Pittsburgh Tribune Review or the Washington Mooney Times. It's the Wall Street Journal. These are the guys who go get their suits made for them. And, oh, pardon me, sir, do you dress left or do you dress right? This op-ed is by former Marine infantryman Ryan Smith. Former Marine infantryman Ryan Smith, and one wonders how much actual combat he saw as a Marine, if this is what he is obsessed about. Well, he claims to have served in the 2003 invasion of Iraq as a Marine infantry squad leader. And usually this kind of thing falls under the general heading of waving the bloody shirt. Although in this case, I think the shirt is brown. I served in the 2003 invasion of Iraq as a Marine Infantry Squad Leader. We rode into war crammed in the back of amphibious assault vehicles. They are designed to hold roughly 15 Marines snugly. You still out there, Dr. John? Did you catch that little bit of wordsmithery there? They are designed to hold roughly 15 Marines snugly. I never knew a Marine could be snugly. But they're also being held roughly. Throw him to the floor, Centurion. Woof we. Shall I throw him to the floor again? Oh, yes, Centurion. Woof we. They are designed to hold roughly 15 Marines, because Marines don't do anything that isn't roughly. I'm not making sport of the Marines. I'm making sport of this poor, paranoid, misogynistic, woman, terrified of women dude who probably has some issues. Just saying. They're designed to hold roughly 15 Marines snugly. Due to maintenance issues, by the end of the invasion, we had as many as 25 men stuffed into the back. Marines were forced to sit in full gear on each other's laps and in contorted positions for hours on end. That was the least of our problems. The invasion was a blitzkrieg. The goal was to move as fast to Baghdad as possible. The column would not stop for a lance corporal, sergeant, lieutenant, or even a company commander to go to the restroom. No, really, we're going... I'm sorry. I didn't write it. This is the bold and brilliant thinking you can find on any day inside the pages of the Wall Street Journal. Sometimes we spent over 48 hours on the move without exiting the vehicles. We were forced to urinate in empty water bottles. Marine, when I say you'll urinate in that empty bottle, I'm going to force you. We were forced to urinate in empty bottles inches from our comrades. A lot of forcing going on. Many Marines developed dysentery from the complete lack of sanitary conditions. When an uncontrollable urge hit a Marine, because, you know, he's certainly not speaking for a soldier in the Army or an airman or a sailor. When an uncontrollable urge hit a Marine, he would be forced to stand as best he could, hold an MRE bag up to his rear, and defecate inches from his seated comrade's face. During the invasion, we wore chemical protective suits because of the fear of chemical or biological weapon attack by people who didn't have any of them. I'm sorry, I added that last part. These are equivalent to a ski jumpsuit and hold in the heat. We also had to wear black rubber boots over our desert boots. On the occasions the column did stop, we would quickly peel off our rubber boots, desert boots, and socks to let our feet air out. It goes on like this and on. And then our Marine, Mr. Smith, who is now an attorney with issues, We were roughly held snugly. Comes to his conclusion. Societal norms are a reality, and their maintenance is important to most members of a society. It is humiliating enough to relieve yourself in front of your male comrades. One can only imagine the humiliation of being forced to relieve yourself in front of the opposite sex. Despite the professionalism of Marines, it would be distracting and potentially traumatizing to be forced to be naked in front of the opposite sex. Wait a minute, where have I heard that before? Oh, I'm sorry. The Pentagon and the CIA thought it would be a great idea to have Iraqi prisoners piled into a pyramid playing with their own genitals in front of Lindy England. See, this is not that. That was a situation of, what's the word I'm looking for here? Oh, yeah, torture. Check, check. So let's try this again. Hi, I'm Bob. After that unplanned moment, and just to let you, I have no idea what causes this. I mean, not a button was pushed, nor knob turned, nor fader faded. Nothing. It just degrades like that, but this time, if it does it again, I'm ready for it. And we won't go through that much of it. No. But my apologies. It's deeply frustrating. By the way, we are halfway, thank you very much. We are halfway to meeting Dr. John's challenge for the evening. And that would that is very helpful indeed. Because, like I said, we finished off January in a bit of a hole, and trying to keep from digging it deeper this month. Oh, Lottie's always good for a smile and a laugh. Fleeing from the Cylon voice of the right wing, the last liberal hillbilly leads a ragtag fugitive fleet of listeners on a lonely quest for a shining planet known as the Horn. and I even got a très bien from Kath in Canada. Merci. That's about as far as my French goes. All right, back to where we were. Let's see if we can sort this out. We were talking a little bit of history, and we were talking about the fact that one of the first people to really, really malign at an almost professional level Richard III was Thomas More, he of the funny hat, he of the massive hypocrisy, that Thomas More. So, why? Well, the fact of the matter is, Richard III was the last Plantagenet king. And the Plantagenets had been running the show in England for quite some time. And so the people who replaced him during that 100-year-long bloodletting. It was about 100 years, wasn't it? That 100-year-long bloodletting known as the War of the Roses. The guy who replaced him had to come up with good reasons for replacing the anointed king. Now, Richard III, apparently, and this is where the story becomes modern, it was thought that his ignoble death, he was said to have been thrown, his corpse was said to have been thrown naked over the back of a horse after his undoing at the Battle of Bosworth Field. It wasn't 300 years. It was about 100 years. So no one had said it. You know, Thomas More had certainly never seen Henry III. Neither had Shakespeare. But anyway, he was the legitimate king. And so you have to make up a bunch of really tawdry crap if you're going to overthrow said king. If you read, for instance, the Henry IV plays by Shakespeare, you find John of Gaunt trying to explain his way around having offed who? Richard II? Yeah. But it turns out that Richard III had done something. I mean, he was only king for a couple of years at best. But during that time, he instituted radical reforms. For instance, the concept of bail. You know, that's in our Constitution. Yeah, that was Richard III. He may have actually upset the social apple cart a little bit with some of those reforms. And so now we find out that a skeleton discovered under a car park in Leicester, the car park having sat upon the site of what was once the monastery of Greyfriars, where tradition said Richard III was buried. Well, it's Richard III. And here is what they hung their calumny on. The skeleton bears signs and symptoms of its mortal owner having suffered from scoliosis, curvature of the spine. Of course, in those less enlightened times, when people like Thomas More were roaming the earth, willing to burn witches and behead heretics and such. Remember, Tyndale, with whom he had a disagreement over whether or not people should be able to actually read and understand the Bible? Whatever fun we have with religion on this program, you cannot discount, for instance, William Tyndale's contribution to literacy, because the English people had a real hunger to read their own Bible instead of relying on priests to tell them what the Bible said when the Bible was in Latin. Tyndale was tormented and hounded through the rest of his days by the likes of Thomas More. And Thomas More wrote a scurrilous, unhistorical account of Richard III, which Shakespeare subsequently used in writing the history play of Richard III. You know Richard III. It ends with him on Bosworth Field hollering, a horse, my kingdom for a horse. Well, it turns out that this people, this culture, took a man who had curvature of the spine, and for that physical deformity, differently abledness, made of him a monster, such that he has been painted with a broad brush by Shakespearean actors ever since, doing everything short of the MC Hammer crab dance. In character as Richard III. Igor in Young Frankenstein could just as easily have played Richard III the way he was portrayed, rough and misshapen. Right? But now his body has been found. And it's caused quite a stir out there. Because, among other things, Richard III was the last king to be killed in battle. After that, British royalty worked very, very hard to try to stay out of danger and away from anywhere that things were where arrows and such were flying around. Last king to be killed in combat, the last Plantagenet, and it was at his death that we get the Tudors, whose reign is capped by Elizabeth I. Then this little passage from the news report. The skull was riddled with wounds, strongly indicative of death in battle, including two blows from bladed weapons, either of which would have been fatal. But what's interesting is that his body also bore wounds of ritual violence, wounds that were done to him after he was dead. But two things that are odd for a monster come through. Why would a monster bring about the concept or introduce the concept of bail into criminal law, allowing a person to be at his or her liberty until trial? One. Two, he also introduced the concept again, deeply embedded in the American legal system, of the presumption of innocence. You know, the idea that you are innocent until proven guilty by a court of competent jurisdiction? Yeah, that he introduced that too, and, well, neither one of those were particularly known for being particularly in favor among the Tudors. The Tudors were usurpers. And so consequently we have this image of Richard III as a, let's see, how does Shakespeare describe him? I'm looking for the phrase itself. He had the murder of his young nephews hung on him. And in the play, he describes himself as deformed, unfinished, and then goes on to describe himself as being absolutely amoral. Very innocent, very, very, very interesting. Very interesting indeed. And they, interestingly, as well, that they proved this by looking way down the line from his sister to a person whose alive in England today who is a distant great-grandnephew. And the mitochondrial DNA fits. They say he would have been 5'8" at full height, but he would have looked shorter because of the scoliosis. And just remember to bring this all full circle, because it's Moran Monday, that a justice of the Supreme Court of the United States wore to the inauguration of a man whom he utterly and completely and irrationally hates a hat of the style worn by a man who deliberately libeled that dead king. So if ever you hear anybody getting all weepy about Thomas More, just remember, he was a religious freak with the morals of an alligator. The only reason he got a good reputation was because he insisted that the Pope had the right to tell the English crown what to do. It really was kind of a defining moment in ideas of religious freedom. But not to fat Tony Scalia, who, with his stupid ass hat, marks himself out as a godforsaken, ignorant medievalist. Which, incidentally, is probably unfair to the concept of medievalism. The Middle Ages get a rough ride, too. So I just seemed seemed an interesting place to begin the conversation tonight. Now, assuming for a moment, yay, Blue Ape in the chat room. Oh, a new nickname, Asshat Scalia. Yes, use it, take it, run with it. That picture, I mean, you've seen it, right? What a jackass. Oh, I can't wait till he's not a member of the Supreme Court anymore. Hopefully it'll happen during this term. And maybe the next Supreme Court appointment won't be a member of Opus Dei. Wouldn't that be lovely? And no. Listen, just because I say Opus Dei does not mean that I'm not talking about the Dan Brown Da Vinci Code bullshit. And no, Beyonce did not give the Illuminati sign during the Super Bowl last night. Jesus Christ. Ooh, she made a triangle. It's the sign of the Illuminati. No, that triangle's flat at the top because it's got a big all-seeing eye on top of it, just like on the back of the dollar bill. Perf. The paranoia, since this is Moran Monday, the paranoia that attaches to right-wingerism is nothing short of mind-boggling. You know they're having a hissy, right? Well, I mean, when aren't they? I forget which paragon of moral virtue it was. Let me see if I can find her name. A paragon of moral virtue had Catherine Jean Lopez. Dunn had a plum, sure enough, purple polka-dotted, blue screaming hissy over at the National Review Online, which is a comedy site as far as I'm concerned, right? Well, they're not funny like The Onion, but in a post today titled Put a Dress On, Catherine Jean Lopez writes, I don't want to linger on this, but last night's Super Bowl halftime show was ridiculous and gratuitously so.
Watching Twitter, it was really no surprise that men made comments about stripper poles and putting dollar bills through their TV sets, was it?
Is this the time where I go back and reread Dr. John's explanation of why no White History Month and how whiteness is a definition, is the unmarked category? Yes, here we have Catherine Jean Lopez. I think somebody had to get out the smelling salts before she was done typing this. Or maybe she just fell over onto her fainting couch.
Why can't we have a national entertainment moment that does not include a mother gyrating in a black teddy? The priceless moment was Destiny's Child reuniting to ask that someone put a ring on it.
In scare quotes. Put a ring on it is in scare quotes.
As I mentioned on Twitter last night, perhaps that case might be best made in another outfit, perhaps without the crotch grabbing.
But you know whose fault that was? You know who made Beyonce grab her crotch? Michelle Obama.
It seems quite disappointing that Michelle Obama would feel the need to tweet about how proud she is of Beyonce.
Because, after all, Beyonce is a filthy, filthy harlot, right? A filthy, filthy, black teddy-wearing, lace-legged crotch-grabber. Agnes, the children are watching, please.
The woman is talented, has a beautiful voice, and could be a role model, and she is on some levels, on others she is an example of cultural surrender rather than leadership.
You got that? Cultural surrender.
Beyonce rocks.
Well, she was so hot she made the power go out in New Orleans. That was her fault, too. Well, that was right. But see, that only happened after she gave the Illuminati sign.
Oh, Jesus.
Do you love that? Can we say racism much?
She has a talented, beautiful voice and could be a role model. And she is on some levels. On others, she is an example of cultural surrender.
Talk about a freighted freaking phrase. Cultural surrender. Where have we heard that before? Oh, I remember when rock and roll was busy getting born, and all the members of the White Concerned Citizens Council was out there a burning them race records. Race music. That was the first name of rock and roll. You know that, right? Race music. Little Richard, Chuck Berry. Long before there was an Elvis or a Carl Perkins or a Johnny Cash, Mr. Sam Phillips was making race records there at Sun in Memphis. But anyway, back to Catherine Jean Lopez, who sounds like a fine, decent, upstanding person after all.
When I saw the First Lady's tweet, I couldn't help but think of the president talking about abortion in terms of his daughter's freedom. I so want the Obamas to be leaders on building a culture of marriage and fatherhood and human dignity. Their actions seem to be telling me to get over my delusion.
Someone needs a Thorazine dart in the neck.
We need to raise our standards. Is it crazy to think we can, even at the Super Bowl?
Good God.
Really, really, the right-wingers sit around looking for things to be offended at. And of course, now mind you, here's Beyonce who married her husband Jay-Z and waited a while to have a kid and had the baby, and she's and Beyonce's in fantastic shape. And I'm not sitting here as like some, you know, drooling troglodytic male saying that she's in fantastic freaking shape. You cannot do what she did on a stage last night. And no.
No. Not at all. It's so deeply... But there's always some member of the right-wing morality police who objects to... Apparently, Catherine Jean Lopez was more than a little moved by that, what is it here, a black teddy? Lingerie department, Agnes. Agnes, lingerie department. Lingerie department, please. Lingerie advisor.
I don't wear lingerie.
Shh. Okay. Catherine Jean Lopez, she says that Beyonce was wearing a black teddy.
She wasn't.
Was that a teddy?
That was not a teddy.
What was that?
I remember from a million years ago what a teddy looked like, and no, that wasn't a teddy.
What? Okay. Performance wear?
Yeah, performance wear.
Costume?
Costume.
I mean, would costume be an appropriate word?
Look, the lady is uptight and jealous. If I could do what Beyonce did, I would do it all the time.
That's true. Let's see if this link leads to a photograph of Catherine Jean Lopez. It may explain a lot.
No, now see, you can't say it because that would be sexist. I can say it because I know how girls talk.
Come on, picture. All right, going to have to look.
Quit that. Okay, she's jealous.
That's a man, baby.
When did Rosie O'Donnell become a speaker?
Okay, we all understand now. This has nothing to do with morals. This has to do with jealousy.
She could.
Why can't we have a national entertainment moment that does not include a mother gyrating in a black teddy?
No.
Why can't I be the one in the black teddy? That's what Catherine Jean Lopez is saying here.
No, wait. I mean, her views here are...
Idiotic.
And it's... What I just said, if I...
And they are driven by pure green... I mean, the green-eyed monster is on the prowl.
If you're a woman and you watch Beyonce, you can appreciate what she has to go through in order to be able to do what she does.
Beyonce or Catherine Jean Lopez?
Beyonce. I'm not in awe.
God, free Daniel, that picture. Mother of pearl. Back to the mailbag. Dr. John writes in with regard to the dumbass hat of Fat Tony Scalia. That hat, God, that hat. To quote Dylan, it balances on his head just like a mattress balances on a bottle of wine. But in all seriousness, Dr. John observes, the Obamas are leaders on building a culture of marriage. The president has given at least some support for the right of all people to marry. More marriage equals a culture of marriage, right? Wrong, John, Dr. John. Sorry, that's no, that's some sort of liberal heathenism, anti-Christian, anti-colonialist, Kenyan, Muslim, Islamo-proto-fascist, running out of air. Meanwhile, Fritz in Arkansas is on the job. Catherine Jean Lopez pulled up her wiki, and this pearl clutching from someone born in 1976? Yes. A year when we celebrated people like Dolly Madison and, well, never mind. Yeah, the name of that, again, the name of that post, Put a Dress On. This is... They're always going to be this way, aren't they? A beautiful woman performing and existing on her own terms, scares the right wing quite out of its wits, doesn't it? Yeah. So there's that. But that's not all. There were plenty of other opportunities for freakouts. The rest of us were trying to watch a football game, but the right wing was looking at, I don't know, it was some sort of cultural nightmare. Where's the other one? Oh, yeah. Thanks, Marty, for this nomination. The Parents Television Council. They're all upset and calling for heads to roll because there was an open microphone on the football field. And I'm afraid to play the audio or else we'll be overtaken by the Cylons again. There were open microphones on the field. The Ravens had won the Super Bowl. And lo and behold, Joe Flacco, the guy who's gone pretty quietly about the business of becoming a fantastic quarterback, Joe Flacco was caught saying, what's the exact quote? That's fucking awesome. Right? And the Parents Television Council, a right-wing bunch of scolds, moved quickly to call damnation down on the head of CBS Sports. You know the Parents Television Council. This is the outfit that was founded and is run. It's an astroturfy bunch. It's run by L. Brent Bozo III. It was founded in 1995 using the National Legion of Decency as its organizing model. And they're all worried about what the cheering will see. Let's see. Billy Ray Cyrus is an honorary member of the Parents Television Council Advisory Board. Sam Brownback. Yeah. You get the idea. And they are, let's see, where is it? Having a hissy because CBS did not move quickly enough to edit out a profanity said by Ravens quarterback Joe Flacco shortly after the game. Oh, for heaven's sakes. The stupid ye have always with ye. But Dr. John also points this out. He says, right-wing Super Bowl tweets, this is a story with more than first meets the eye. Daily Coast reports a series of horrific tweets Sunday night from a right-winger named Todd Kincannon. This is vile stuff. About the least offensive one is, quote, it hasn't been this dark in the Superdome since all those poors occupied it after Hurricane Katrina. Nasty. Who is Todd Kincannon? Well, he's not just some guy sitting in his basement tweeting racist stuff. According to Addicting Info, Todd Kincannon is the former general counsel and executive director of, while no one will be surprised, the South Carolina Republican Party. As Dr. John points out, he recently got himself in trouble in the not-too-distant past for texting photos of his penis to some female acquaintances. Dr. John says, so I guess it shouldn't be surprising, but it does seem like more proof that the right has a serious sex and race problem. Horace Boothroyd III is the author of the Daily Coast Diary entry, Drunken Conservative Tweets. I don't know if I should read these. This is, well, you know what? This is, I'm not going to read these for prurient reasons or for titillating reasons, but I'm going to read these simply because this is internet-based broadcasting. And I know one thing if I know nothing else. In terrestrial-driven, FCC-censored, for-profit media, this will not be broadcast. Again, if you take issue with my reading these things, let me know. I'm apologizing in advance. If little Timmy and little Cindy and little Johnny and little Susie are in the room, run them out. Okay. This is Todd Kincannon. This is the former counsel, general counsel and executive director of the Family Values Espousing South Carolina GOP. He's a lawyer. And he's a sexter. And he's disgusting. During the Super Bowl, this is where he went. And apparently he thought he was really being funny, too, because he was working a meme. This Super Bowl sucks more dick than adult Trayvon Martin would have for drug money. I can't even make that... What? This Super Bowl sucks more dick than Gomer Pyle did for weekend passes. Then I guess someone took issue with him. RealBrother0003 on Twitter. I don't know. What's the difference between Trayvon Martin and RealBrother0003? Trayvon stopped tweeting stupid shit about a year ago. Will karma find me as quick as it did Trayvon? Oh, wait. I make it past my 18th birthday. Make. So I guess the answer is no. What's the difference between Trayvon Martin and a dead baby? They're both dead, but Pepsi doesn't taste like Trayvon. Dr. John is right. We could work this for a while. This guy has a, this Family Values Republican has a real problem. Oh, dear God. Okay, Jack in Shreveport with a little bit of backstory. This Kincannon creep is the same guy who does the, and I'm calling him the creep, not Jack, is the same guy that does the Twitter Gulag Defense Network that works to get liberals suspended on Twitter. Probably well paid for it, too. Robert in Australia pointing out, swearing on TV, way back in 1972 at the Australian TV Awards called the Logies, Michael Cole, he of Mod Squad fame, got up to accept an award. It was late at night, and by then he was blind drunk. Shit, was what he said. No one has really worried about swearing on TV ever since. There are restrictions for children and family viewing. You cannot swear before 9 p.m. After that, no one's worried. Well, over here in the land of the free and the home of the brave, we're all worried. Very, very worried. Because you never know at 10 o'clock at night. I mean, those are family. It's the Super Bowl. It's like church, you know. I mean, what's little Timmy going to do if he hears Joe Flacco say, fucking awesome? The next thing you know, he'll have a clown suit and a rifle, because this is America. And it'll be the Obama's fault, or maybe Michelle's, or possibly Beyonce's. And then there's this coming in from Isaac. You know, once upon a time, and I think I've mentioned this before, it may be apocryphal, but it may be true. After all of his theorizing about penises and sex and so forth, someone finally noticed that Sigmund Freud walked around with a cigar in his mouth an awful lot of the time. And they said, Dr. Freud, given all of your theories, what is the significance of your cigar? And Dr. Freud said, sometimes a cigar is only a cigar. Well, you'd actually like to think that sometimes a football game is only a football game, even if it's the Super Bowl. I wasn't particularly taken with the ads this year. I thought the RAV4 genie was kind of cute. The Joe Montana stain on the Niners jersey bit was funny. The Clydesdale commercial, oh my God, Margie and Ferg were just bawling. Ferg came over to me after the Clydesdale commercial. I need a hug. Yeah. And then the Volkswagen. You know, Volkswagen always does a good ad. But sometimes a football game is only a football game, even if it's the Super Bowl. But instead it's been turned into this, what? I guess I was out of the room at the right time. There was a Scientology ad? Really? And yet an ad from SodaStream got ixnayed because it was offensive to Coke and Pepsi, because it blamed Coke and Pepsi for the fact that there is a portion of the Pacific Ocean the size of Texas that's nothing but six-pack bands and pop bottles? Makes you wish a football game could be only a football game. But, yeah, Isaac sends this along. Because the power went out in the Superdome, first thing I thought was, well, there goes Cole not keeping the lights on again. Cole's not very good at keeping the lights on when you get right down to it. Michael Brown was watching the football game and couldn't resist getting on his Twitter account. You know what? There's something that, and I guess we do it on our side too, but I think right-wingers are going to need like some sort of handler to take away their mobile devices to keep them from tweeting while they're loaded. I was beginning to wonder if I was the only sober man in America last night. Bars here were jumping. Like plenty of people watching the power outage in the New Orleans Superdome during the Super Bowl on Sunday, Michael Brown cracked a Katrina joke on Twitter. Dear God. It's from Yahoo News. Unlike plenty of people, however, Brown was former director of the Federal Emergency Management Agency under President George W. Bush, in charge of managing the federal response to the 2005 hurricane that killed more than 1,800 people and left thousands of residents homeless. Here's Brown's tweet. Someone just told me there was fighting going on in the NOLA Superdome. Hashtag shocked. In many ways, the Superdome in 2005 was, of course, an abattoir. Duris Holmes tweeted back, come see the waterline marks on the street signs by my church and see how funny Katrina Dome tweets are. This is a man who, of course, boasted about how fabulous he looked with his shirt sleeves rolled up while people were drowning. Jesus God. It's more and money Monday. No doubt about that. Oh, okay. Okay, I understand a little better now. Jack says not all the Super Bowl ads were played everywhere in the country. So maybe that's why I didn't see the Scientology ad. Fritz in Arkansas pointing out Michael Brown, subject line, Michael Brown. Michael Brown equals shut the up, you still incompetent asshole. Which he is. By the way, thanks for everybody. Thanks to everybody who's kicking in. We have very nearly gotten right on top of Dr. John's challenge for the evening. He's doubling the first $50 that come in to make it into $100, and that's a big help. You know, we try to raise about $150 a night here, and because of the various and sundry things that have kept me away from the microphone and technical difficulties and stuff, that has become. Fundraising has become, slow. This from Robert in Australia, my opinion of Twitter, and this is brilliant. Never before has so much been said by so many about absolutely nothing. You know, and a lot of us were, there were a couple of Ray Lewis jokes when the lights went out. Kind of inevitable, really. But one of the reasons I'm glad that Baltimore won this Super Bowl is I would a million times rather hear Joe Flacco say, yeah, that's effing awesome, than hear Colin Kaepernick declaim on how grateful he was to Jesus for helping him get a ring. I didn't realize this, but Colin Kaepernick is like Tim Tebow with talent. All that ink up and down, and I'm not criticizing anybody who does tats. That's cool by me. I mean, you know, maybe in another life. But apparently all that ink up and down Colin Kaepernick, those are like Bible verses and stuff. And he's a serious fundy. So we were at least spared that, although we were not spared Ray, unindicted co-conspirator Lewis, extolling the glories of his Savior. He can't have everything. Well, I didn't realize the line was San Francisco and 3.5. Whoever bet the Ravens, Lottie says in the chat room, made a bundle. Marty pointing out, no jokes about 49er fingerprints on the light and power switches. No, Agnes is taking blame for the power blackout at the Superdome. But no, just bizarreness. You've got, on the one hand, I mean, we've been through all this stuff. Catherine Jean Lopez, South Carolina, Trayvon, I feel like I need a, I feel like I need a shower after that Kim Cannon story. Ugh. Oh, by the way, thank you very much. We have just crossed over the, matching line for Dr. John's challenge this evening. Thank you very much. Thank you, everyone. it would be wonderful if we could keep this going for the next hour and a half or so and do a little bit of catching up. Sooner or later, we have to go away from the Super Bowl, however, and deal with some ugly reality. Oh, Agnes. Agnes. She's our, in addition to being our Catherine Jean Lopez expert, Agnes is also our ugly reality expert.
Oh, my God. Ugly reality?
Yeah, ugly reality.
Aw, Margaret, don't laugh. It's okay. My hair looks like that a lot of
no,
times,
No, it
too.
Doesn't.
Yes, it does.
No, no, you never do that. No.
And I have the Philly shirt, too.
Oh, my God.
Now quit that. She's well, Philly's no, baby.
Well, yeah, somebody had to love her, but the thing is, she's hateful on the inside, too.
Okay, well, that's bad.
She's got a hateful spirit. The she we're talking about here is Idaho State Senator Cheryl Nuxall.
Okay, I just read the headline,
okay,
and
yeah,
I understand.
Right, yeah. Idaho State Senator Cheryl Nuxall. Now we're going into the swamp. This is where it gets ugly. They're still having their hissies about Obamacare. And Cheryl Nuxall is one of those people having said hissies. She wants to make sure that the state of Idaho does not set up a health insurance exchange because, and you understand what the exchanges are. They're just clearing houses for all the little for-profit insurance companies to go and make more money off of us. And the way the Affordable Care Act works, you can either a state can either set one up on its own, or let the feds do it, or do a federal-state partnership. Well, State Senator Cheryl Nuxall, Idaho, wants to make sure that Idaho does not set up an insurance exchange because she's worried about the health and well-being of the insurance companies. She just knows that we're on our way to death panels and that communist universal single-payer health care. She tweets, too. Cheryl Nuxall does. But she also sent out a blast email. To what passes for her supporters. All 120 of them. Some of these things are difficult to read because of how deeply offensive they are. One need not have family who survived or died in the Holocaust in order to be offended, shocked, disgusted by the way the Holocaust is used to advance political purposes by people who have essentially no understanding of what it was and less sympathy. Idaho State Senator Cheryl Nuxall says the following with regard to the Affordable Care Act and the exchanges. The insurance companies are creating their own tombs, much like the Jews boarding the trains to concentration camps. Private insurers are used by the feds to put the system in place because the federal government has no way to set up the exchange. Based on legislation and the general process that is written toward this legislation, the federal government will want nothing to do with private insurance companies. The feds will have a national system of health insurance, and they will eliminate the insurance companies. First of all, that's about at least 98% word salad. It doesn't make any sense. I am a long-term reader and knower and user of words, and the way those are strung together might as well be, 'twas brillig when the slidey toes did guy, right. It's jabberwocky. Why is this offensive? Let us count the ways. One, she says insurance companies are creating their own tombs, and then proceeds to her Holocaust analogy, which then by comparison tells us that she thinks that the victims of the Holocaust were responsible for their own demise. Much like the Jews boarding the trains to concentration camps, Jesus, Mary, and Joseph, sweet, compassionate Buddha, Almighty Krishna, flying spaghetti monster on a frisbee. How much stupid can be packed and concentrated into one sentence? Much like the Jews boarding the trains to concentration camps, private insurers are used by the feds to put the system in place because the federal government has no way to set up the exchange. What the f*** does that mean? It means that she thinks that the Jews volunteered to get on the trains that went to places like Dachau and Bergen-Belsen and Sobibor and Auschwitz. It means, conversely, I suppose, that somehow or another the insurance companies are being compelled to make more money. Because that's what the Affordable Care Act does for for-profit insurance companies. I actually asked questions about that in this past week when I was over at Health Action 2013 that Families USA set up. I asked, how do the subsidies work? Because they're tax credits. And I was thinking about the mandate in terms of if you have to buy health insurance and you don't have the money up front, having a tax credit a year later is cold comfort. And it was explained to me, no, the tax credits take place immediately. So you get a reduced rate on your for-profit insurance up to 400% of the poverty level. You get a rate break on your health insurance, and the money immediately goes directly to the insurance companies. Now you can just take me outside and whip me with wet noodles till I scream, but I'm damned if I can figure out how that is the same thing as compelling people for no other reason than them being who they are to board trains and go to death camps. It makes me livid. No, it makes me want to take up a collection, buy a plane ticket, send it to Idaho State Senator Cheryl Nuxall, and let her go and see Auschwitz.
Hell, I'd settle for buying her a plane ticket to Washington, D.C. and let her go to the Holocaust Memorial. And here's the real sign of genius at work. They offered her a chance to back down. The newspaper in the area is the Idaho Spokesman Review. And the Idaho Spokesman Review checked in with State Senator Cheryl Nuxall, Repiglickin from Cottonwood, Idaho. And when they asked her about what she said, "I just want people to hear the truth and to be aware that what is being presented before us is a socialistic program. There is no disrespect for any group or people with the analogy. I just want people to know the truth." And other Republicans don't dare criticize her. The president pro tem of the Idaho State Senate, another Republican, Brent Hill, said, "This is a very emotional issue for a lot of people. There's a lot of stuff going around, a lot of information, a lot of viewpoints being expressed. As we get closer to making that decision, the rhetoric's going to get more dramatic. I don't think this is exclusive to Senator Nuxall." That's not an excuse. Saying that there are more people babbling crazy shit out there besides Senator Nuxall is not the same as saying that Senator Nuxall ought not be babbling crazy shit. This is past moranity. This is past stupid. This is mean and evil and wicked. It's unbearable. I'm thinking back and trying to remember if I've ever been guilty of anything like this. I don't think I have. Going to the Holocaust for an analogy is just something that does not naturally occur to me. But if you're a right winger, and if your entire being is suffused with the sense that you, even though you're in a massive majority as a so-called Christian, you've still got a persecution complex, you go to this like that. You go to the Holocaust because you think that what? Obviously, it demeans. What she did demeans the suffering of those who lost loved ones and those who died in that horrific event. One. Two, it means that you have absolutely no comprehension whatsoever of your subject matter. Because an insurance legislative scheme, no matter how bad or good it might be, and I'm kind of ambivalent about some of it,
I'd far rather have a universal single-payer health care program than something whereby we're providing more corporate welfare to the for-profit health care industry. Yes, absolutely. Yes, absolutely. No question about it. But however you see it, it is impossible with a functioning human brain to get anywhere near an analogy that begins, Obamacare is as to insurance companies as Holocaust was as to the Jews. You just can't do that. You cannot do that and have working brain cells or human compassion or empathy. Oh, wait, they're right-wingers. They hate empathy, remember? Yeah, empathy is probably like Kenyan Muslim socialist communism. Texas Betsy tells me, you do not have enough time left in this show for me to even approach this story. You're welcome to try, Betsy. Took me a minute to realize what she was talking about. Betsy, I don't mean in that regard. I mean, Catherine Jean Lopez, remember her from earlier? That woman dancing in that black teddy. Kalo's post and thoughts on public dress, this coming from Texas Betsy. Kalo. Oh, by the way, Texas Betsy says, yes, you can, Bob. You have working evil brain, not me, but yeah, you can make that analogy and have working brain cells as long as the working brain cells are evil. Can we also, Betsy, can we include patently stupid? Because I just don't think brain cells work right that come up with that kind of stuff. They have to be steeped or marinated in some sort of abiding poison. And, of course, we know what that abiding poison is. That abiding poison has a name. It has several names. It has names like Hannity and Limbaugh and O'Reilly. It has names like Beck and Alex Jones. Yeah. Sure, says Texas Betsy, stupid is fine, but this sounds more like evil. And it is, but it's because there is a culture of evil that facilitates this. And I don't want to go too deep into the history or anything, but the horrors of the Holocaust were created by a cultural soup of hatred. People just generally aren't that hateful by themselves. They have to have help. But Betsy writes in, Kalo's post and thoughts on public dress. Dear Bob, because of my religious values, I don't dress provocatively in public. In fact, I dress fairly modestly by U.S. standards, but not modestly according to most Orthodox Jews. The traditional Jewish view is that the body is private and is not shared with anyone other than the spouse and is covered to one degree or other in the presence of members of the opposite sex. I am the principal of a tiny synagogue religious school in addition to the fifth grade public school gig that pays the bills. And I do have a dress code for my religious school students. It's not very different from the public school dress code. But shorts or skirts must reach the top of the knee and not the end of the fingers. And shoulders must be covered. Heads also, for boys. It's my right as principal in conjunction with the parents and the spiritual leader. When Texteen was young, I told him which clothing styles were okay in which context. Again, my right as a mom.
But I have no right, says Texas Betsy, to tell anyone else how to dress. Not my place. And to tell someone on TV who I don't even know, an adult? No way. If I am offended by someone's dress or by overt sexuality, I turn off the TV or look the other way. In fact, I have the right to do the same for anything on TV that I don't want to see. We do not need modesty police in this country. Signed, Texas Betsy in a skirt or maybe jeans and a sleeve blouse. Precisely. This is not rocket science. This is... This is easy to comprehend for anybody who isn't a right-winger. Just like you and I can sit here and have a conversation about what a freaking idiot Idaho State Senator Cheryl Nuxall is. And we all know she's an idiot. Everybody knows she's an idiot except her. And we know this because when she's offered a chance to back away from a really dumbass statement, like much like the Jews boarding the trains to concentration camps, private insurers are used by the feds to put the system in place because the federal government has no way to set up the exchange. Whatever that means. But she gets a chance to back away from it, and like I said, she doubled down. She said the following. I felt badly for the Jews. It wasn't just Jews, but Jews and Christians and Catholics and priests. My thing was they didn't know what was going on. The insurance companies are not realizing what's going on, what's going to end up in their demise. You see, this is one of those things where when you have to say, I felt badly for the Jews, but I also felt badly because, you know, Christians got persecuted too. I mean, there's truth in that. The differently abled were sent to death camps in Nazi Germany. Homosexuals were slated for destruction. But the vast majority of the people who were sent to their deaths were sent to their deaths because they were Jewish. That does not discount the suffering of others. It is merely a recitation of historical fact. But if Miss Northern Idaho here, this apparent Sarah Palin wannabe, Moose Feratu, oh, I still laugh. This is the some of my best friends are black defense. I felt badly for the Jews. Felt, past tense. When did you stop feeling badly, Senator? You felt badly, but now you do not feel badly? Just when was that? The Holocaust arguably ended in 1945. You're not that old, sister. That means at some point you learned about it, you felt badly for them, and you moved on and didn't need to think about them anymore until you realized that the poor little goddamned insurance companies were the ones that are being led off to Dachau. Jumpin' Jehoshaphat. I felt badly for the Jews. But it wasn't just the Jews, but Jews and Christians and Catholics and priests. Can't work the homos in there, can you, honey? No, I don't feel badly for them. They're evil and satanic. Did you notice that? She couldn't get the homosexual community and, you know, the pink triangle bunch? Mm-mm. No, sorry. They don't get a mention. Betsy also points out, she says,
Historical context. My fifth graders have almost no historical context for any history event. No surprise, because they've not been taught much history. So when a student in my school doesn't know who the Nazis were or uses the word Hitler without understanding what exactly they're referring to, all caps here, we educate them. One would think an adult state senator would be a little better informed than kids in a school district that ignores social studies for years at a time. Only not. Because, see, Idaho State Senator Cheryl Nuxall gets all of her information in church. And if anything has been proven to be a truism in this country, it is that the information you get in church, well, let's just say everything there is faith-based. And why is she all upset? Because Idaho Governor Butch Otter, who, like her, is a member of the Repig-Lickin' Party, but apparently he doesn't quite yet have monkeys flying out of his butt, or they don't fly out as quickly or with the frequency that they do out hers. Now, I mean, Butch Otter has been out there and he said lots of things, you know, Obamacare is going to dig up your dead mother and all the stuff they say. Yeah, death panels. But he did, just as New Mexico Governor Susana Martinez did, and no, really, seriously, crazy old hatchet-faced Arizona Governor Jan Brewer did decide to, well, I don't know if he's gotten on board with the Medicaid expansion like those two did, but he's agreed to set up an exchange. It's just a little marketplace. It's a little online marketplace. That's all it is. Nobody's getting a tattoo. Nobody's wearing any appliques on their clothing, for God's sakes. It's just a little online marketplace where you can shop for which insurance company you want to have given the corporate welfare. The GOP is the corporate welfare party. And that's what's got Idaho State Senator Cheryl Nuxall up in a hissy. Makes you kind of wonder if she's met Sally Kearns from down Oklahoma way. She's about, they're crazy on the same level. You know, crazy like a kumquat.
Crazy like a
Thank you, Mr. Connery. Lucky for you, the microphone didn't pick that up. It's unbearable. But this isn't, you know, this isn't the end of it. There'll be more of this. Because facts don't matter in this discussion. That's what makes having this discussion so godforsaken difficult. Because on the one hand, we're sitting over here in little, you know, little lefty land, tiny country. And we're saying things like, gosh, I don't know. I'd rather have a universal single-payer healthcare system in which everybody's insured in this country, and I don't know if the real answer is pouring more corporate welfare down the ravenous, insatiable gullet of the insurance industry, and then, you know, the little bell goes off there at the College Bowl, ding, your time is up, thank you, and for the response from the Republican Party, Holocaust! That's no way to run a national dialogue. What did Lewis Black say? They've got Hitler Tourette's. Yeah, see, the Texas Betsy says, my religious school kiddos get 90% of their Holocaust studies at synagogue, but I think that even the third graders are better informed than this state senator. Well, they've got to be.
Because to hear her talk, you know, the Holocaust happened because, you know, Hitler had to go through all of those Jews just to get to those few Catholic priests that he wanted to persecute. It's maddening. And it is also seemingly endless. It is more in Monday. And there's no let up. What do I mean by that? Well, you know what? We're going to take a little break, and then we'll find out. I'm absolutely terrified of the prospect of playing any audio at all. So I'm just going to let this thing go dark for a couple of minutes. Sorry to do that to you. Please stick around. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back. I'm Bob Kincaid. We are past the $100 mark, thanks to Dr. John's challenge for this evening and your kind involvement. And we're at about 110. Another $40, and we'll actually be finished fundraising, you know, for this night. PayPal buttons at headonradionetwork.com. So too is the snail mail address. Your participation is much appreciated, and it is the only thing that keeps all of this going. And one of these days, we'll get all these little technical glitches sorted out, and it'll be a wonderful, wonderful day. But we will. We will be right back. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
All right, so we're back. Yeah, coffee breaks over, back on my head. 15 minutes past the hour, about 45 minutes remaining in this evening's program by fits and starts. And, well, if I had a little more faith in this system, there would have been irritating music for you to listen to. Sorry about that. We can do that. Shall we try? Shall we try to take a call? It'll be by Skype, of course. We are Skype dependent here at this point in time. Let me make sure that all the Skype settings are where they need to be. Yeah, everything's there the way it ought to be. And if you want to try to reach the program, let's make this let's end the filibobster. We will invoke cloture. Will in Chicago is calling. Let's see if this works. Do I have you, Will?
Yes. Do you hear me now?
I hear you just fine.
Yes. I was going to say a friend once joked that somewhere it should be written, if there are perhaps infinite levels of enlightenment which humans can begin to achieve and perhaps progress from there, there are perhaps infinite levels of stupidity to which mortals of all sorts can fall. I mean, let us begin with the person in Idaho comparing Obamacare to the Holocaust. One, the Jews of Europe did not think that they were, by and large, going to their deaths on boarding the trains, but rather being relocated for the most part, at least early on. And by the way, the president is not using armed guards and tanks and aircraft weaponry to enforce his will. Secondly, I think Betsy is correct. Her third grade students more likely know more about the Holocaust than this individual in Idaho. A terrestrial bed bug probably knows more. Anything that you can put in orbit around this planet, such as a small monkey, might know more than this woman. But
again, Will, we come back to that fundamental inquiry we seem always to be making on with stories like this, and that is, if we assume all these things to be true, it's not so much what does this say about I've mercifully forgotten her name already. But what does it say about the people who vote for her? Would you care to speculate just for a moment,
yeah,
Will, about what her campaigns are like?
Fear-mongering, ignorance, trying to convince people that someone is out to get you. And if the someone is a person who believes differently, lives in a different area, or, good heavens, looks or sounds differently, they have to be the enemy because they're not us. I mean, let's face it, the oldest gig of tyrants is to create two sorts of enemies, an internal enemy and external enemy. In the Cold War, we had Russians or the Chinese. But for the internal enemies, we needed to create some each and every time. That's why we had the McCarthy hearing. That's why we had members of the peace movement and the civil rights movement portrayed by the right as unpatriotic. And we still see the same rhetoric going on today, implying that the president is an agent of foreign powers and liberals are somehow less American. Never mind the fact that I can find several liberals online who have served this country with more distinction and probably have put more flesh in the game than a certain person from Idaho could ever expect to fit into a foxhole, although they might have to enlarge the size of the foxholes, considering some of the pundits and politicians on the right. But I think that when you have people who are taught to be afraid, fear becomes an addiction. It becomes a drug. There is evidence based on neurological studies, and I will recommend the book The Political Brain by Drew Weston, that fear loses its effectiveness as a motivator over time. But what has the GOP had to offer in the last 30 years but fear and policies that do not work? And how do they sell it? Fear. I mean, how?
Right.
What
well, but
try?
remember, they've never had they haven't had an original idea, and the Republican Party hasn't had an original idea in its entire existence, and that includes abolition. They bogarted onto that. Now here's a separate story, Will, that I think you might find interesting. With all the ignorance that was present in that one lone Idaho senator's word salad. Okay, that's one idiotic state senator. I mean, really, really way down the just to be realistic, way the hell down on the Republican food chain. I mean, she's further down the ladder than the goober from South Carolina with his Trayvon Martin tweets, which are equally disgusting. But let's take now an organization that is highly I hate to be redundant with my words, but highly organized, deeply sophisticated, able to strike fear in the hearts of virtually any politician in this country, the National Rifle Association, okay? They've compiled an enemies list, Will.
Yes, I saw it. I mean, who...
Did you notice who's on it?
Oh, yes. Lots of celebrities, many who...
The Anti-Defamation League is on it.
Yes, the ADL.
B'nai B'rith is on it.
B'nai B'rith. Anyone who has
the Jewish Labor Organization, the Jewish Labor Committee, is on it.
Yes, and I'm curious if somehow you could have anonymous, and not urging any illegal activity here, but if anonymous clicked into the website of either Stormfront or the American Nazi Party and did a Venn diagram of their enemies list with that of the NRA.
Well, you know what's fascinating? Stormfront is not on the enemies list. But the Southern Christian Leadership Conference is.
Is, yes. And, I mean, just if we think about it, this is an enemies list where in practically any other country, any other country's national law enforcement group would say, who is this organization, and should I look at them just if you show them the enemies list anonymously? Are these people in danger? And yet, I think with the NRA is that they have made a lot of money from the gun and ammo industry, selling propaganda, spreading fear, and they have to have the enemies list, because if they don't have enemies, who is going to persecute the gun owners? And
but
I
this
mean,
is this is a frightening list, Will.
It is, because my fear...
Because this is an enemies list promulgated by an organization dedicated to arming as many American citizens as it possibly can, and to keeping, as you've noted, keeping people stirred up with fear. I mean, this is... you know, on the one hand, I could be a little bit flippant, and I could say, well, I guess this is pretty obvious. For as much as I've been railing against the NRA, it's pretty obvious to me that I really haven't arrived yet because I didn't make the list. K.D. Lang's on there. Ricky Lake's on there. Dennis Leary's on there. Diane Keaton's on there. I'm not on there.
Right.
That's a little facetious. But by the same token, there's not Sally Field, okay? Carrie Fisher, Mike Farrell. I had the privilege.
The American Trauma Society, the American Medical Association, the American Federation of Teachers. Ellen DeGeneres, Hadassah.
Sean Connery?
Yes, and of course, the YWCA and the U.S. Catholic Conference, Department of Social Development. I mean, good heavens. Let me use a phrase that,
Britney Spears?
Yeah. Ellen Burstyn, Mel Brooks, Phil Donahue, well, you had to figure him. But Howard Hessman, okay. Helen Hunt, Norman Lear, Spike Lee, Bette Midler.
The entire Zappa family?
Yeah, Bonnie Raitt, who has more talent in a little finger than a lot of modern artists have in their whole body.
They've got Jimmy Carter on an enemies list. That should be enough to get them shut down.
Exactly.
That's a former president. He's got Secret Service protection, Will.
Exactly. And I think I have to use a phrase that I think most long-term listeners at the Horn will know, but for those who are new, I will explain it. Stochastic terrorism.
Yes.
It is when someone points out an enemy, such as Dr. Edward Tiller, as I recall, mm-hmm. if I'm recalling his first name, the abortion doctor who was ultimately gunned down to death as he walked out of a church on a Sunday morning. We had Bill O'Reilly and others portray him as the incarnation of evil, as a man who was evil, as a baby killer, as someone who did not deserve to be part of a civilized society. And someone decided, yes, I must act. I must be the hand of vengeance. And this is what I'm afraid. I mean, do you want to wake up one morning and find out someone started firing shots into a Bruce Springsteen or Barbara Streisand concert, all because they were following the NRA list? No. And I think we have to ask ourselves, why should we give this organization any credibility? We should stand up and say, sorry, you are not interested in solutions. You are merely interested in being a prostitute for the gun and ammo industry, Mr. LaPierre. Though, truth be told, Jabba the Hutt and some of the environmental oddities in the Star Wars films would have been more attractive. So, again, we have to have courage, because if it's not us, who will? And we have to educate people. Now, are we going to succeed with everyone? No. There are some people who you can no more change their opinion than you can stop the tide. But by and large, for the bulk of the American public, we can. And there are polls showing that 84% to 91% of Americans support universal gun registration, not taking all guns off the street and reducing us to what we had in 1792, but registration, much like we would have for a car. But the NRA may have finally found it is incapable of wielding the influence they thought they had in 1994. And the question is, will we keep the pressure up on the politicians, because that's the only thing that's going to make them to do anything? If we have to find our own strength, because in the end, that's the only thing that changes democracy in our country, the people.
Well, I hate to admit it, Will, but I have said it not just once, but a dozen times probably. I despair of this country ever actually getting serious about the horrors of gun violence that we have here. I see it as no more likely than this country getting serious about climate change, because both things are in their way absolutely existential threats, and the only ability we have to respond to them is to pretend that they don't exist.
Yes, but that is not a survival strategy. So the question is, will, with either or both issues, will we reach a critical moment where there is change? Because one of the odd things about human history is we have the impossible conflict and a solution. We saw that in many ways. With the Cold War, where honestly, growing up, when I was about Cass's age, I thought it was more likely than not that the world would end in nuclear fire. This was during the Reagan era. But other things happen and people pursued other paths. Similarly, we have had action on things that were once deemed impossible. Women gained the vote. African Americans gained the vote. So it isn't going to be impossible. It's going to be as hard as hell because you have a lot of forces resistant to it. But if we presume we're defeated from the get-go, it may become a self-fulfilling prophecy. So we need to make the efforts, even if we don't think they'll work, if only to say that we made the efforts. And if not, our generation being the one that succeeds, perhaps we may plant the seeds for a future generation. We have to have this hope, even if we are utterly frustrated. Honestly, I would think that in most other societies, we would have had the discussion on guns that we're having now. But we are finally having a discussion. Maybe because it finally happened in the place that...
Yeah, but Will, and I'm not trying to just be a naysayer or disagreeing for disagreement's sake. We've had the conversation before. I mean, we had the conversation to the point that Michael Moore put out a brilliant movie called the Bowling for Columbine.
Right.
We have had discussion after discussion after discussion, and they tend eventually to fall off the radar because of the ADD nature of our for-profit media. Now, the fact that we're still talking about it, is that helpful? I hope so, but I just don't. I suppose I could be convinced, but I don't know how, that maybe this will lead to something. I think if there's anything hopeful out of all this, it is the fact that more and more people are willing to get in the NRA's face. And that's where
the most positive signs, Bob, because it used to be no one dared criticize the NRA, because if you did, you'd lose your office.
Or they'd shoot you.
Now I think they are finding things have changed. It's just that the most annoying thing about trying to forecast when change will come in this or any society is predicting the moment. And the truth is we never know. In some ways, I think this is a very good thing because it means we can still be surprised, much like I was pleasantly surprised that the conflict between the U.S. and the USSR ended not in nuclear fire, but in talk and the eventual collapse of the Soviet Union. So we have to admit there can be change in this world. The problem is we're frustrated, and justifiably so. I am sick and tired of all the kids being shot on the streets of Chicago and our other major cities. I am tired, and one would think that we would have gotten into this before, but we'll have to see. But even if we don't think that this will produce the change we want, we have to keep pushing, because someday maybe it will.
Yeah, it's certainly not a reason to give up.
No.
But
we also have to admit, like you said, we have been here before, and we have things. Have seen things not work out as we wished. And that has to be frustrating because we think, if only, good heavens, any of those parents of those 20 kids in Newton, as well as the parent of Hydea Pendleton from King College Prep School in Chicago, both wish they could live in a world where they had been better control on the access of people who are mentally ill or criminals to arms so that they could say one thing to their children. How was your day?
Yeah, yeah.
But we're not there yet, but we're going to have to keep pushing on this issue, on climate change, anything else, and realize it's a long, hard slog. It's a marathon. But as long as we keep on moving ahead, we still have a chance. And why do you think the naysayers, particularly the pundits on the right, try to ridicule and despise us and make it seem that we have no power? Because they want us to believe we have no power. I like to take what they say and turn around as a challenge and say, I'm sorry, Mr. LaPierre, while I respect your right to your opinion, I'm going to prove you so utterly and completely wrong that you will be but an embarrassing footnote in your organization's history.
It does say something when even Chris Wallace of Radio Rwanda Fox News feels emboldened enough to tell Wayne LaPierre to his face that he's engaging in crazy talk. And that happened this weekend.
Exactly. And if someone had told you a year ago Chris Wallace was doing that, what would be your question to that person?
What alternative universe do you live in? Right. Yeah.
Right. But we are beginning to see it, because I think even the pundits on the right are worried that they are standing against the tide. And much like Canute, they will have to either withdraw or drown. Now, mind you, I would like Fox News to go under, because it is a propaganda channel from its outset, beginning with the proposal of Roger Ailes for GOP TV with Nixon.
Yeah.
But the fact that Chris Wallace, who is perhaps their most credible public figure, says this to Wayne LaPierre tells me the wind is shifting. So we'll have to see where it blows. I hope it blows in a good way to a more rational set of policies. But we're going to have to hold everyone's feet to the fire, including the president, including those in the Congress, and those in the Senate, because that's the only way we get things done. The model for change in this country is a simple one, but a hard one. People get upset. People organize. People protest. They propose things. And sooner or later, someone picks up the banner and says, you know, you guys are absolutely right. I'm supporting this. What often happens a few times is those calls get rejected. But we have to realize we have the final say still. Still, despite a corrupt Supreme Court, which has equated speech with money and corporations with people, we still have this power. And if we act on it, we can still make change. To quote the last scene from the movie On the Beach, where there's a sign, it is not too late, brother. It is not too late.
As long as there's breath in us, indeed. Well, Will, it's awful good to hear from you, and I'm glad to see we could actually make the technology behave itself. Let's hope this thing remains stable.
But, amen to that.
All right, we will talk soon. You take care, Will.
Take care.
All right, bye now. That's Will calling from Chicago, and we actually got through a phone call, which is a beautiful thing. If you want to try your luck, if you want to take a run at this, you're welcome to jump in. This NRA enemies list, one, the fact that they feel so bold that they can just put it out there and expect no one to criticize them for it. They don't like the American Association of Retired Persons. They don't like the AFL-CIO. You reckon the NRA's got any AFL-CIO members in it? If pushed to choose, which would you choose, the NRA or your union? Let's see. They don't like pediatricians. They don't like the ACLU that would actually go to bat for them. They don't like ambulatory care nurses. They don't like medical women. They don't like medical students. They don't like the American Medical Association. They don't like the American Association of Surgery and Trauma. They don't like the American Federation of Teachers. They really don't like the American Medical Association. They put them on there twice. They don't like the lawyers either. They don't like the American Bar Association. They don't like counselors. They don't like the American Counseling Association. They don't like the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry, because people who do children and adolescent psychiatry often have to deal with the after effects of gun violence, you see. Let's see. They don't like nurses. They don't like neurological surgeons. They don't like family and consumer scientists. They don't like the American Firearms Association. Go figure. They don't like the American Jewish Committee. They don't like the American Jewish Congress. They don't like the Anti-Defamation League. They don't like B'nai B'rith. They don't like the Jewish Labor Committee. They don't like the Black Mental Health Alliance. They don't like the Children's Defense Fund. They don't like the Church of the Brethren. They don't like the Coalition for Peace Action. They don't like the College Democrats. They don't like Common Cause. They don't like the Consumer Federation of America. We're still in the seas. They don't like the Environmental Action Foundation. They don't like the Episcopal Church. They don't like the Friends Committee. They don't like the Gray Panthers. They don't like Hadassah. They don't like the International Ladies Garment Workers Union. They don't like the Lauder Foundation. They don't like the Lutherans. They don't like the Mennonites. They don't like the police. They don't like the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence. And by police, I don't mean, you know, the band. I mean, you know, the guys in blue. The people in blue. Sorry, that was sexist, wasn't it? My apologies. They don't like school psychologists. They don't like pediatric nurses. They don't like elementary school principals. They don't like public hospitals. They don't like social workers. They don't like La Raza. They don't like the Churches of Christ. They don't like Negro women. They don't like Jewish women either. They don't like the National Political Congress of Black Women. They don't like the Urban League. They don't like the freaking PTA. Really? Really? When you're so paranoid you don't like the PTA, that's just pathetic. They don't like Physicians for Social Responsibility. They don't like Public Citizen. They don't like the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. They don't like the U.S. Catholic Conference Department of Social Development. They don't like the Union of American Hebrew Congregations. They don't like the Unitarians. They don't like the U.S. Catholic Conference. They don't like the Methodists. Who do they like? Guns. And really, they don't like the YWCA. They don't like Krista Allen, Susie Amos, Louie Anderson, Richard Dean Anderson. Really, they don't like MacGyver. That's when you know your paranoia has really gone all the way to the root. They don't like Drew Barrymore. They don't like Kevin Bacon. No 6 degrees for you, Wayne LaPierre. They don't like William Baldwin. Okay. They don't like Tony Bennett. They don't like Boys to Men. They don't like John Bon Jovi. And they apparently hold a grudge because they don't like Peter Bonners, you know, the guy who played the dentist across the hall from Bob Hartley's office in the original Bob Newhart show. That's grudge holding. They don't like Steve Buscemi. They don't like Kate Capshaw. Jill Clayburgh's dead, isn't she? Maybe not. Let's see. They don't like Kevin Costner or Sean Connery. They don't like Billy Crystal. This just goes on and on and on. Rebecca De Mornay, Ellen DeGeneres, Phil Donahue, well, Fran Drescher, Richard Dreyfuss, Sandy Duncan. I know Nora Ephron's dead, but they still hate her. She's just because you're dead doesn't mean they take you off the list. They don't like Doug Flutie. Well, they sure as shit don't like Jane Fonda. They got a hard-on for Art Garfunkel. That's like kitten-kicking. Dustin Hoffman, Hal Holbrook. On and on and on. Lisa Kudrow, Lenny Kravitz. Spike Lee, Hal Linden. Who doesn't like Barney Miller? Oh, yeah, they don't like Madonna. Wait a minute. Beyonce on here? They don't like NSYNC, and they don't like Mike Myers, and they don't like Bette Midler nor Mary Tyler Moore, damn it. They don't like Spock. Really. They don't. The NRA has Leonard Nimoy on their enemies list. Let's see. They do not. They do not like Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die. No, they don't like Mandy Patinkin. They don't like Aidan Quinn. That's going to get them on the wrong side of Agnes. They don't like Mary Lou Retton. Really. Just give up. They don't like Mary Lou Retton. Kira Sedgwick. Barbara Streisand. They don't like Sylvester Stallone. They don't like The Temptations. This isn't an enemies list. This is a list of paranoia that would rise to the comic if it was not for the fact that this is a list compiled by people with vast amounts of firearms. Joanne Woodward is dead. Still on the list. And seriously, the entire Zappa family, Ahmet, Diva, Dweezil, Gale, and Moon, they hate the Zappas. They don't like journalists. Jimmy Breslin, dead. Still on the list. Oh, they don't like Gary Trudeau. They don't like A&M Records. They don't like the Argosy Casino. They don't like Ben and Jerry's Ice Cream. No, we want more Guar gum, says the NRA. Oh, they don't like Blue Cross Blue Shield of Kansas City. They don't like Earth Grains. They don't like Hallmark cards. Yeah, they just get some of those off-brand crappy cards when they need to. No, they just do a line drawing of a goddamned AR-15 on an index card and send it. Happy Mother's Day. They don't like the Kansas City Royals. They don't like the Kansas City Chiefs. Apparently, they don't like Kansas City. They don't like Levi's jeans. They don't like Sara Lee Corporation. Well, you're just shit out of luck with that. With the Twinkies gone now, aren't you, Wayne LaPierre? They don't like Sprint. They don't like the St. Louis Rams. They've got a Missouri problem. They don't like St. Louis University. They damn sure ain't eating no Stonyfield Farms yogurt. They don't like Cap City's ABC. They don't like the Christian Publishing Society. They don't like CBS. They don't like anybody. They don't like Motorcycle Cruiser Magazine. They don't like the New York Times. No surprise. Don't like the Baltimore Sun, the Chicago Trib, the Washington Post. And then at the bottom, they proudly announced that this was compiled by the NRA Institute for Legislative Action, 11250 Waples Mill Road, that's W-A-P-L-E-S, Fairfax, Virginia. Yeah, they're proud to have put that together. And Betsy, that's just mean. No one likes Bon Jovi. Well, I had a Bon Jovi problem last summer. Okay. Oh, I apologize. Bob, Joanne Woodward isn't dead. Sorry, Ms. Woodward. I apologize. Well, don't worry. Even after you are, they won't take you off the list. Okay. My sincere apologies to Ms. Woodward. And thanks for the correction, Beth. Now, one of the people that they apparently do like is a guy you may have heard our buddy Spike talk about from time to time in years past on this program, Lou Barletta. Apparently the booking folks over at This Week with George Snuffleupagus were having trouble getting guests, so they uncovered a rock and Lou Barletta slithered out. and they were there to talk about gun violence. And they put, this was just unfair, they put the cognitively challenged Lou Barletta up against Paul Krugman. Really? This is a perfect example of why people believe Washington is broke. Really? I thought this was the gun debate, not the money debate. Oh, he means broken. This horrific incident in Newtown, and here is what our what is our debate? It's focusing on guns when there's not one person at this table who really believes that that's the root of what happened there. And when we have people that get into the mindset that they want to harm people as a former mayor, I know people will get guns no matter what laws we pass, just like the illegal drug. And Paul Krugman cut him off. I caught you on a false statement there, because at least I do believe that guns are the root. There are crazy people everywhere, but mass murderers are a lot more common here than... Barletta cuts him off. You believe guns are more important than dealing with mental health and our culture? Is our culture lending itself that we are raising children that are desensitized to murder, to killing people? Krugman, brains. I look at the international differences. Countries that have effective gun control have a lot fewer. He had to be cut off. Would banning spoons stop obesity? I favor the really cheap tequila when I have to drink liquor through a straw. Would banning spoons stop obesity? Yeah, that's a great analogy, Lou Barletta, because spoons and obesity are as directly connected as, say, Adam Lanza to an AR-15 to a six-year-old who was stitched in two by a... Yeah, it's the same thing. But I think the NRA is in such deep and weird denial that they haven't really thought out this mental illness canard that they're working so hard these days. Because Lou Barletta was sent out there to say that mental illness is the problem with gun violence. Any lawyer could tell you that the odds of any criminal defense lawyer could tell you that the odds of getting a criminal defendant off on a mental wrap is really, really difficult. The odds are very low because of the standard of proof involved. And yet here's Lou Barletta, who, for all of his mental majesty in comparing gun deaths to spoons, here's Lou Barletta arguing basically that everyone who pulls the trigger on another human is crazy, when neither the facts nor the courts will bear that out. Is that what the NRA wants? Does the NRA want everybody charged with gun violence in this country to say, "Oh, I'm sorry, that's crazy. That's nuts. Sorry." And I'm not trying to be insensitive to people with mental illness. That's not the purpose of no. But these things have meaning. It means something when you say that guns are not in any wise any part of the problem, which is the corner that the NRA has painted itself into. That's dangerous. And not just for not just for us normal people, but the NRA too. Because that means that if somebody decides to go out and play whack-a-mole with Wayne LaPierre, that he, too, gets to plead that he was crazy. But see, that's the thing. If somebody did squeeze a round off at old Wayne,
that person would be argued to be saner than you or me, and part of some deep and abiding liberal Kenyan Muslim socialist plot. See, gun violence is only a product of mental illness until it isn't. See how it works? Yeah. No, I don't think they really want to go down this road. I'm just saying. I mean, it's catch 22. And that's some catch, that catch 22, and you don't want to be caught in it. But nonetheless, that is the overtowering logical process brought to you by an actual member of Congress from the Republican Party named Lou Barletta. Only Mexico, deep in the midst of the horrors of a drug gang war, which, well, you know, brought to you by the United States of America, only Mexico has a higher rate of firearm homicides than the United States within the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. Only Mexico. And Mexico has what it has because of what Porfirio Diaz said. Poor Mexico, so far from God, so near to the United States. It's true. So we did manage to get a show in this evening, and thanks to everybody who responded to Dr. John's challenge. It is much appreciated. And hopefully we can go forward and pick up a little bit, make up a little bit of lost ground. Yeah, see, Benedict has it in the chat room. Banning spoons would stop the epidemic of six-year-olds being cut in half by spoons in the hands of crazy people. Yeah. Seriously, in all seriousness, thank you for keeping this conversation going. We'll have a go at it again tomorrow evening. We'll be working on Capitol Hill all day tomorrow on the AIC Act. If you haven't been to AIC Act.org, run by and do what you can to help us get this bill sponsored, co-sponsored, and passed, and help us get it introduced in the Senate as well. We need your calls. There's a contact your member of Congress widget right there at ACAC.org. Put it to use. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen. First and foremost, you, with your ideas, your financial support, and the fact that you share the most precious thing you have with us, your time. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to Agnes for help with the posts. Thanks to John Fox for everything he does to keep all the technology behaving itself. Thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Everything that happens here happens because of the White Rose Society. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and again, ACAC.org. Back tomorrow night, and always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next on the Horn. There's a lot of bad blood underneath.
crowd. I'm a prepper, he's a prepper, she's a prepper. I'm sure the paranoid prepper crowd is going to see a new market for MREs. Extra strong MRE bags designed to hold fecal matter and double as fertilizer for those survival seed packages sold by companies advertising on that nutty Austin, Texas talk radio host show. Oh, God. See, I had real doubts about doing this story. From Dr. John, he says, it is time to page Dr. Freud, Bob.